commencing countdown.
3, 2, 1.
This is the Contracting Experience. Connecting government contracting professionals to the world around them through conversations with acquisition influencers, insights into evolving hot topics, and sharing lessons learned from the field.
Welcome, podcast listeners. On this episode of The Contracting Experience, we hear part one of a two-part series with Ms. Alexis Bunnell, the Chief Information Officer at the Air Force Research Laboratory, as she provides an AI outlook for Air Force acquisition. Prior to her current position as CIO, she was the emerging technology evangelist at Google, driving the use of emerging technologies to drive efficiency and innovation within government organizations. Welcome, Ms. Bunnell. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
All right, excellent. We'll just dive right into it, ma'am. You got on the radar because last November, you provided a presentation to the PK Alliance titled An AI Outlook in Air Force Acquisition. That was a tremendous presentation. I listened to it a couple times now. Really loved it. You really emphasized how we can use technology and specifically AI to, quote, tackle the toil and, quote, put minutes on mission. Love those taglines. Could you give our listeners a flavor for what that looks like and why it's so important?
Sure, absolutely. Well, and starting with the fact that actually your listeners are so important. So let's start with the importance of acquisition and national security. You know, when we think about how everything happens in government, at the end of the day, it has to be negotiated, bought, purchased, you know, applied. And it's so critical that really, in my mind, you know, acquisition professionals are really the unsung heroes, and the work never stops, right? And there's never enough people to do the work. And quite frankly, if it is not running well, you know, we don't run well and our national security is not optimized. And so I think when I think about things like tackling the toil and putting minutes back on mission, you know, in this case, what I'm really asking myself is how is it possible for us to, you know, start from a place of respect, to honor the role of acquisitions professionals, to start from a place of empathy, to understand that it is a really hard job. And, you know, it is something that takes time and consideration and experience, and really think about how is it that we arm those modern acquisition professionals and complement them with all of the tools. To me, it's as important that they have, you know, the right kind of tools for the fight as it is if they were a warfighter, right? Because they are part of that ecosystem. So, you know, the same way I would want to have a warfighter have the best cockpit, you know, the best weapon, you know, I really want to make sure that our acquisition professionals and really everyone, you know, within our defense and national security environment has the right tools. So when I think about that, what I get excited about is, first of all, recognizing that our work includes a lot of things that maybe aren't always sexy, right? There are rules and laws and regulations and ways we do things to make sure that they're done well, they're done appropriately, they're done in a way that gives kind of everyone a fair chance at being an incredible partner to government. But there is a lot of work, right? And a lot of paperwork and, you know, hundreds of millions of pages of reading and processing. You know, it's really interesting just how much any individual acquisition professional has to navigate. And so for me, I think the question whenever I think about any digital tool is how is it that I help contribute to doing less of maybe what, you know, feels purposeful or feels exquisite and critical from the experience of an acquisition professional? And instead, how do I make sure that technology can help them do the things that maybe are not as rewarding or that technology can benefit? And then finally, the goal of that, as you mentioned, is always to give people minutes on mission. And if it's okay, I'd love to share, you know, kind of an example of where it became clear to me that reducing toil was so critical. Is that all right?
Absolutely, ma'am. That would be great.
So I won't say which force, but I was lucky enough while I was at Google to often host a lot of different defense and government leaders who wanted to understand the difference in culture between working at a place like Google and maybe working at a place, you know, within the DoD family. And so one of the things that we would tend to do is we would actually sit and do something that I called at the time, like the Google gap. So we would sit down, and I always made sure this, people always find this interesting. I always made sure that actually the people we interview are often the ones who are leaving that organization, company, or in this case, that force. And what we do is we ask them, you know, to really rank their sense of mastery, autonomy, and purpose when they started the role, and then their sense of mastery, autonomy, and purpose now that they have chosen to move on. And you know, what's so interesting is that their sense of autonomy, or that ability to work independently, you know, they understood they were part of a large organization. And so, you know, they didn't necessarily expect an incredible amount of autonomy. And their autonomy score, you know, went down slightly from their expectation to where it was when they decided to leave. Their mastery, their sense of, have I learned new things? Have I become more valuable? Have I become a larger contributor? Actually went up. They recognized that they were really learning important skills that were, you know, useful not only in their current role, but in future roles. But the thing that got me was their sense of purpose. Their sense of purpose dropped from a 9 to a 2. And, you know, at the time, most folks in the force, most leadership thought that people were leaving because they could get a better gig in the private sector or something like that. And, you know, that's not actually the core root of what we found. What we found is that, you know, the punchline for me, and I literally kind of have this on everything, is that toil kills purpose faster than mission can replace it. Meaning you and I both know when we're doing meaningful work, right? That's hitting the mission, that's really advancing the most important things. But we also know when we are doing something or in a meeting or maybe doing, you know, a piece of training or filling out a form that really isn't necessarily at its root doing the most to advance the mission. And I call that toil, because what toil really is the emotional difference between, you know, what you know is important and what you have to spend your time on. And so what we tend to find is that in organizations that are high toil organizations, in essence, the sense of purpose of the workforce can drop. So what I'm really excited about when I think about a digital tool or technology, in this case, artificial intelligence, what I want to look at is how much more time can someone spend in those minutes on mission, right? To spend in those those purpose filling and purpose fulfilling roles versus maybe, you know, the toil or the taking kind of elements that sometimes people have to navigate. So when I look at technology, I really start from almost an empathetic lens to say, how does this person get more time to do what they know matters?
Okay, ma'am, that's absolutely phenomenal stuff. I mean, not only does it, you know, help us do our day-to-day jobs, as you say, tame the toil, create that sense of purpose, it benefits everything in the organization, from retention to culture to everything else. Just phenomenal. But piggybacking on culture a little bit, you have kind of a unique transition. So I'm assuming you may have crossed a cultural divide coming from a company like Google and joining us over here in the Department of Defense. Maybe going from a mindset of AI development, excitement, and early adoption at Google to maybe, just maybe, a mindset of caution and skepticism within the government. Maybe I'm way off there, but can you share some of your experiences and observations during that transition?
Yeah, absolutely, and you are not way off. In fact, that dichotomy was part of the reason why, you know, I left Google and actually decided to come to the Air Force Research Lab and to contribute to, you know, DoD and our national security mission. What I really found is, as I was, especially during COVID, so we have to remember, sometimes COVID feels a long time ago, but, you know, really COVID was an incredible time, if you think about it from a leadership perspective, where all of a sudden, you know, we had defense and government and other leaders around the world really having to, you know, to kind of digitize, to go digital, to look at technology in a completely different way, right? Really with a completely different role than it had had previously. And so as I was helping different organizations, for example, the DMV, understand how is it that you give driver's licenses to people that you can't do driver's tests with, right? Or, you know, how is it that you help, you know, hundreds of thousands of people, even millions of people transition from, you know, their previous work to maybe something that, that had stopped because of COVID into something where their skills were equally as relevant, but maybe they just hadn't done them before. And, you know, what I found is that, you know, there was a sense of almost anxiety and fear and foreboding around the topic of artificial intelligence. And I got to tell you, you know, my feeling as a citizen, you know, as a person in this nation was like, wait a minute, you know, this is America's kind of best technology, right? We have an amazing edge right now. And I thought to myself, well, the only group that benefits by us being scared of our own technology is the adversary. And so, you know, for me coming over, you know, to contribute to AFRL and just the larger relationship kind of with these emerging technologies, it was really about, I found, right-sizing the narrative. And so what I mean by that is a couple things. You know, first and foremost, I don't want anyone to ever feel scared of any technology, right? Or intimidated or anxious, because technology, quite frankly, I know I'm not supposed to, you know, curse on podcasts. So I'll say, you know, technology is, you know, kind of bull doohickey or whatever we want to say, if it doesn't help people, right? If it isn't making something better, if it isn't making the mission better. And so really holding the technology we have to that standard. But what I found is a couple of differences. So the first thing I found is that, you know, when someone asked me what the difference between Google and, you know, DoD was, it was a really interesting observation. And I remember kind of the moment as I was trying to wrap my head around that question. And I realized that to me, what was very different is that Google or a lot of companies in the private sector kind of understand and treat time as the ultimate weapons platform. And yet in DoD, when I went and looked at kind of where time went, it was like, oh, I don't know if DoD treats time as its most powerful weapons platform, right? And I think that this is an era now where speed is critical and technologies that can give us, you know, kind of dominance, you know, as quickly as possible, not just speed of relevance, right? But speed of dominance. And so it became really clear to me that, all right, we've got to figure out what's standing in the way of this, you know, AI adoption. And I really found two broken narratives that I will tell you I was absolutely guilty of propagating. And I'll tell you what those two are and why I think what I think they should be and why I think they're so dangerous. So the first thing with, you know, emerging technologies like AI is we tend to talk about them, you know, that they're very complicated, they're very technical, right? They, you know, it's something that in the realm of, you know, these very, very smart technical people. And when we take a technology and we talk about it that way to people, what in essence we're saying without meaning to say it is we're saying you're not smart enough to understand this technology. And, you know, I sat back and I thought, well, wait a minute. I'm around all of these people. We've all, you know, kind of updated and, you know, gotten and conquered every new technology that's going to come out. And we are perfectly able to understand this technology as well. So I think the first narrative shift was really being able to help people understand you are absolutely smart enough right now, today, to use this technology, you know, to use a generative AI tool, you know, a large language model, you are absolutely enough, instead of making it kind of exotic and mystic and feeling kind of separated from our folks. But I will say the second kind of narrative challenge that I really feel no one should accept. And that is, you know, one of the things we often talk about when we talk about AI is we pose questions like, what about morality, responsibility, ethics? And I want to remind people that we, whether you are a warfighter, whether you are a public servant, a civil servant, we are expected to show up ethically, morally, you know, responsibly, with intentionality every day. You know, we were expected to show up that way before AI. We're expected to show up that way as we learn AI, and we're expected to show, you know, up that way 6 months from now, 2 years from now. And I want to drive home that point even more. And that is that, you know, if you think about it, if someone out there is listening to me and they decided, you know, to put on a uniform as their way of serving this country, you know, the moment they put on that uniform, the moment they chose that path, they signed up to potentially make the hardest calls that any human being on earth may ever have to make, right? The hardest calls about human life, you know, about good guys, bad guys. And I really was actually quite offended because I thought, you know what? How dare we tell people who have chosen to dedicate their life with the expectation that they may have to make those hard calls, that they're not moral enough or ethical enough, you know, or responsible enough to navigate AI. You know, you can't trust someone with a missile or $100 million cockpit or a high level security clearance and then say we don't trust you with ChatGPT, right? Or Gemini or Google. And so, you know, I got to say, I think one of the reasons of coming here was to be able to contribute and also contribute to our research on human machine teaming to say, well, what does it look like to have great human machine teaming? And that's just not about the technology. That's actually about how we as humans, whether that's in our professional roles or personal roles, really have a relationship with this technology. And, you know, so for me, I think the culture, I'm excited. I think we're starting to turn that corner. You know, I get to see people's kind of eyes and lives light up as they get access to these tools. But more than anything, if someone listening right now takes any message away from our time together today, it should be that they are absolutely enough right now. They are smart enough. They are moral and ethical enough, and they've got this. And I hope that they feel comfortable and confident leaning in, you know, learning how this might impact their, you know, their work. And I'm hoping that we can contribute to that.
Oh, that was excellent, ma'am. Great, great conversation on everything from culture to some of those ironies with trust and ethics issues. And the bottom line is everybody can use this today. And the more you use it, the better you're going to get at it. So speaking of which, we actually had a podcast episode. It's been a little over a year now on artificial intelligence. And for our listeners, that was episode 53. If you happen to have missed it, it's still available on your favorite podcast listening platform, episode 53, where Lieutenant Colonel, PhD, Dan Finkenstadt, he did a great job explaining generative AI to us. But at the time, we were kind of in that early phase. And a vast majority of us, I'll self-admit here, we were in that cautious or skeptic mode of thinking, right? We were hearing that it wasn't secure. We were hearing it wasn't reliable. We were hearing all about the hallucinations it provided. And in fairness, we were in that learning mode. And I think that mindset has drastically changed since that time. And I think we're getting smarter with how to use it, and it's getting smarter the more it is getting used, if that makes sense. So with that, you like to say AI provides options, not necessarily answers. And I think that's just part of learning how to use it. So I wanted to give you an opportunity here to talk about NipperGPT, developed by your team there at AFRL, available for use across the .mil enterprise. And I think NipperGPT definitely gives folks that increased level of trust over the commercial software, and that it's cleared up to IL5. It doesn't share your queries with anyone else. What else can you tell us about NipperGPT, maybe present state, and where you think it might go in the future?
Sure. So, I mean, I think what was really exciting about NipperGPT is, you know, that was, and it still is, a research platform that really helps us understand human-machine teaming. So to your point, you know, if we think back more than a year ago, there were not tools available for someone to really kind of, you know, start to just be able to play, you know, with generative AI within their professional capacity, right? A lot of people had things in their personal capacity. And to your point, a lot of the question and the, you know, around security and things like that were really important for us to get right. You know, we cannot use tools that are insecure. And so we thought, you know, it's really important, more than anything, it was really important for us to go into, and when I say us, I mean, you know, DoD writ large, really, to go into the AI era as like informed users and customers. So we're big believers, right, in learning by doing. And the way I looked at, you know, kind of NipperGPT and this journey is a few fold. The first is that there were a lot of assumptions. You know, as we make progress and kind of advance our relationships with technology, you know, we really forget sometimes the questions we used to ask. And so as an example, you know, when we were starting this research, there were a lot of leaders who said, well, does anyone even want to use it? Right? Does anyone even, you know, want to have access to this? You know, another question was, are they going to use it appropriately and right? Are they going to kind of, you know, follow the rules? And so by putting out a human machine teaming research platform like NIPRGPT, we were actually able to, you know, to learn by doing. And so there are a few things. Number one, to your point, we were able to put out, you know, a basic tool. And I want to be very clear, you know, NIPRGPT is a basic, you know, generative AI platform. You know, it works from a lot of, you know, open source software that is out there. And the goal was, you know, to be able to put out something that we could get these benefits, we could ask and answer some of these questions, but more importantly, people could practice and play. Because, you know, using an AI tool is not the same as a Google search. You know, the amount of complexity and things like that, and I can give some examples, is far different. And so the way I looked at this a little bit was, we have, and we already have some of these landings. So I'm going to talk about them as like the F-35s, right? Our commercial partners who, you know, have made these incredible frontier models, you know, I really look at those as like the F-35s, right? We're going to be able to land those, but you've got to design a runway that can take them, right? You've got to be able to have pilots that can fly them. And so, you know, we knew that these are coming and we're excited to see some of them, you know, some of them start to land. But in the meantime, I really felt like, well, we've got to put our folks at least in a crop duster, right? And let them get some flight hours in, you know, let them learn to fly, because it really is a different relationship with knowledge at speed and scale with AI. And so we thought, well, we're going to get to learn a couple of things. Number one and two, we were able to answer the question very clearly that people absolutely want it. You know, we had a huge amount of people and still, you know, have a large amount that kind of join us in this research every day and use the tool. The second, though, and so critical, was able to go back to leaders now and say, you know what? People aren't misusing this, right? They're respecting the boundaries. They're respecting, you know, the types of information that's appropriate. We also got to do incredible amounts of understanding, how is it that you train someone to help take them from being maybe uncomfortable with AI to actually being a great kind of prompter, and then even more so, getting bored and starting to say, hey, can it do this? Can it do that? And it's always funny to people when I tell them that one of my measures of success is how quickly we can take someone from feeling anxious to bored. Right. And what I mean by that is, if we, you know, are really in this kind of, you know, generation of like an exponential age, and we've got to move faster, better, smarter than our adversaries, what that really means is we can have the greatest technology on earth, but if our people don't feel comfortable using it, then it doesn't, you know, it's not brought to bear with the level and the power that it can have. And so when I think about AI, you know, taking someone and saying, hey, here's a basic tool. It's not going to train on the info you give it. It's not going to, you know, result in compiled classified. It's not going to judge you if you ask a silly question, right? You know, it's a safe place for you to start getting your flight hours in. And I think what, you know, became so interesting for us is that we started, of course, in the learning by doing to learn other critical things. We got to learn, you know, that actually this type of work and this type of technology takes a lot of compute, right? And we made some assumptions about where that would be or how that we would have that. And those were really important lessons learned that we got to share with, you know, other forces within, you know, within Air Force and Space Force, and then even back with our commercial partners. We also really got to see what types of features or use cases were people using it for. And so that really showed us in the acquisition space, for example, you know, that there were particular parts of an acquisition, you know, path or program that, you know, different stages where AI was really helpful. And then, of course, different stages where, no, you the human, the expert, really have to put kind of eyes on and designate and really distill, you know, that information and that knowledge down and make the call, so to speak. And that was huge, because I think that contributed to, you know, other tools that are coming out like ActBot and kind of other, you know, models that are being trained to help our acquisitions professionals. Another thing that is really interesting is we started to learn a little bit about how people adopt AI, and I'll share one of those frameworks with you right now. One of the things that's really interesting is the first thing we saw people do, which makes sense if we go back to our toil conversation, is the first thing they look to do with AI is lower the pain, right? So when you've got, you know, let's say 40 pages that you have to synthesize really well into a brief for your leader, or you have, you know, a concept and you've got to create a whole workshop or, you know, an entire approach around it, then this is something that AI is really good for, right? And you would start seeing people have like what I like to call their ta-da, right? Where all of a sudden it was like, oh, wow, you know, AI can do this. And then they would tend to think a little bit, you know, about, well, you know, it is quite good at some things. So what does that mean for me? And I call that the uh-oh stage, right? So, you know, they have to think and reflect a little bit on like, what is the right role for this technology in their lives and their role and their mission? The third thing they do then is when they start to really find those things, I call it their aha moment, right? So they're starting to kind of realize, oh, wow, something that might have taken me 2 months before maybe only takes me 2 days, right? Or it used to take me 20 hours and now it takes me 20 minutes. And we're absolutely seeing generative AI have that benefit. Another thing, you know, and then of course the goal after aha is, as I mentioned, I want to get them to ho-hum or bored, because the magic, you know, the magic of ho-hum means that now they are ready for those F-35s. They're like, hey, I want my plane to go faster. I want it to go higher, right? I want it to go in atmospheres I couldn't. And what they're really saying in terms of generative AI, I want to have a relationship with knowledge that is even more robust, right? And to me, what's so exciting about thinking of the future of Nipper GPT is actually the graduation of people from it to those bigger, better, badder tools, right? And what's really exciting is I think what'll be a lot of the next stage of tools that we see are those specialty or role-based tools. So, you know, whether it is something like ACBOT or other tools for acquisition, whether it's something called MACE, which has been developed for foreign disclosure, you know, you're just starting to see AI really come alive in so many different kind of role, mission, and capacities that, quite frankly, I think will become really exciting, you know, even beyond that kind of generative, you know, basic AI tool. Another thing that I would say is, you know, as we're seeing people kind of start to eliminate that pain, the next thing they do is they want to kind of organize their informational universe. And this, if anyone has not seen this yet, I'm sure there's lots of folks, this is still kind of wonky, but if you have not been introduced to what we call RAG in AI, your world will forever change. And all RAG is, for someone who's listening, who's maybe used a tool like Nipper GPT or, you know, ChatGPT or Gemini or, you know, Anthropic or any of those things. If you've used one of those tools, you're used to putting in a query. And then in essence, you know that the tool or the model kind of takes a look at all of its information it has available and tries to kind of compile and predict what will please you. What are the options that will hit the mark? To your point, not the answers, the options that will hit the mark. But what RAG does is even more magical, because you know what? It's great that a model says, hey, you know, I pulled from this incredible collection of human knowledge. But what RAG does, it actually allows you to be the empowered curator. So what that means is if I was working, for example, on the F-35 program, I could go and I could say, wait a minute, I already know my program documents, you know, my budget, my contracts, my resources, you know, the annual reports that we put out every year. And you can actually curate that information that you know, that you've identified, that you trust, and then actually apply, you know, really the magic of AI on top of that. And so what that means is you have far less hallucinations, right? And you have far more value to your daily work, because now you're crafting a knowledge universe like directly with the knowledge that you value. And to me as a CIO, this changes everything, right? Imagine you don't have to wait on me to develop a system, right, or a platform or a program for you. You get to be in kind of the knowledge leadership chair, right? You get to point the tools to what works for you. And this is why I'm so passionate about AI, because it's really the first tool that, instead of making humans adapt to it, right? You have to learn how to navigate it, learn the dropdowns, learn this and that. It adapts to you. And I think this is so critical in our human machine teaming journey. So obviously you can tell that I get so excited about this, and I'm never gonna shush up. But just to close out that point, after people then start to curate those amazing, relationships with the knowledge they care about, then they start to change their process on their own, right? And this is where getting to true digital transformation from that individual instead of just digitization, right? So they've used AI to lower the pain. They've started to create and curate their own relationship with knowledge. They then change what they do and how they do it because they have a new and dynamic relationship with knowledge. And then finally, they start to do, sometimes folks will hear about things called agentics. And that's really, if you think about it, that's when, you've changed how you do your process, you've organized your information, you've gotten some minutes on mission back. And agentics is like when you all of a sudden get to have minions that work for you. So I am very excited, to kind of tell folks that there will be a future state where, regardless if you are an individual contributor now, you will absolutely, via the power of AI, kind of have the ability to, to really almost magnify yourself, into kind of, you imagined you could break into kind of five, I can't remember the superhero. There's some superhero where they kind of had five different versions of themselves, right? Able to fight the battle. And so I think when we get into agentics, that's going to be really interesting, because then you really have humans kind of saying, hey, machine, this is what I need. This is what's helpful. This is where I don't want to toil. And then they get those true, true minutes on mission back.
All right, ma'am. Excellent stuff. That's a great way to close out part one of our two-part series on an AI outlook for Air Force acquisition. Thank you so much for showing us how AI can help us all tackle the toil and put minutes back on mission with tools such as Nipper GPT. For those of our audience that are old enough to remember, this is where we would turn over the album or cassette tape and get ready to hear side two. Please join us for part two of this discussion as Ms. Bunnell shares some more tips and tricks with using generative AI, explains more about ACBOT, that long-awaited AI-assisted contract writing tool, and provides more insight on how AI can help us manage a world of information and data overload. You won't want to miss it. As a reminder, you can subscribe to the Contracting Experience podcast from any of your podcast listening platforms. You can also now find us on Facebook as well as our YouTube channel. Be sure to like us, follow us, and subscribe to receive updates and automatic downloads so you don't miss a single episode. I'm your host, Rob Lorton, from the AFMC Contracting Digital Division, and I hope you can join us again on our upcoming episodes. Until then, stay tuned and stay connected.